Tellson's Bank has been wife and family to me all my life, man and boy. And yet these last 5 years have let me share a part of another way of life. I am fond, a fond old man, and maybe a fool for it. Business, Jarvis Lorry. Beware feelings. Good morning, Mr. Blagg. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Lorry.
And he disappeared into the very small, very dark, very ugly, very uncommodious old-fashioned place, Tellson's Bank. I slipped quietly into the haphazard house, past the old stool that usually housed Jerry Cruncher, occasional porter and messenger, who had drifted by time and tide into the post. The seat was vacant. Not even his son, a grisly urchin of 12, was yet in situ.
I'll tell him you was at it again. I shall tell him.
Oh, you stop me scrapping, son. Me back's giving me jip.
Nah, you was at it. And he'd help me to tell him the minute you was at it. Father, here, father.
Don't wake your father. He was late back.
Late back, was he? Late back from where, I want to know.
I'm not saying. Let him sleep.
We got work today. The bank. He said to wake him, and you on your benders at it. I'll tell him all right. You'll be sorry for it. You know you will.
Will you shut your noise over there? Shut your... What's the time?
Near enough. 8:30.
I told you. Make me 7, I said. You sit about...
I was scrubbing the floor, Jerry.
She was a-kneeling down, Father. I caught her.
You did? Kneeling, was it?
I was resting me back.
Kneel on that!
Resting me back, Jerry. Scrubbing makes it
sore. Bust me. You was at it. At it again. Tell me. You was, wouldn't you? Get my boot, boy, and a dish of tea. Now you tell me you was at it.
I never said nothing.
What are you up to, aggravator? Tell me. Tell me, or else...
You tell her, Father. I tell you, I caught her.
Only saying my prayers.
Saying your prayers. You are a nice woman. Flopping yourself down and praying against me. You are a nice woman.
I was praying for you, Jerry.
You wasn't. And if you was, I won't be took the liberty with. Jerry, young Jerry. Where's me boots? Now, you see your mother. There's a nice woman. A praying against your father's prosperity. You've got a dutiful mother, you have, my son. You've got a religious mother, you have, my boy. Going and flopping herself down and praying that the bread and butter might be taken out of the mouth of her only child.
I never, Jerry, I never tell anyone, talk to anyone about what I know. And I never would. I only wish with all my heart you'd stop doing what you do.
Young Jerry, dress yourself while I get the man up with boots. And you get breakfast on the table. And young Jerry, if you see her so much as show a sign of more flopping, give me a call, son.
Yes.
I tell you, I won't be gone again in this manner. I won't pull out of it. What do you say now?
And Jerry Cruncher cleaned the mysterious mud from his boots, sat to his breakfast with the air of a man who has been to a none too convivial party all night, and worried his breakfast rather than ate it. What he did of a night time when he went out with a sack and some bits of metal and a few lengths of rope, he wasn't saying. But his daytime occupation took him to a wooden stool made from a broken back chair beneath the banking house window that was nearest Temple Bar. Mr. Cruncher was as well known to Fleet Street and the Temple as the bar itself, and was almost as ill-looking.
Porter wanted.
Porter, sir. You was asking for a porter, Mr. Blagg, sir.
Yeah, you know the Old Bailey well, no doubt.
Yeah, I know it. I do know the Bailey.
Just so. And you know Mr. Lorry?
Oh, I know Mr. Lorry so much better, and I know the Bailey much better. I'm a honest tradesman and no wish to know the bailey any better than what I do already.
Yes. Very well. Now, find the door where the witnesses go in and show the doorkeeper this note for Mr. Lorry. He will then let you in.
Am I to wait in the court, sir?
I am going to tell you. The doorkeeper will pass the note to Mr. Lorry, and do you make any gesture that will attract Mr. Lorry's attention and show him where you stand. Then what you have to do is to remain there until he wants you.
Is that all, sir?
That's all. He wishes to have a messenger to hand. This is to tell him you are there.
I suppose I've been trying forgeries this morning.
Treason.
Treason. That's quartering. Barbarous.
It's the law. It is the law.
It's hard in the law to spoil a man, I think. Well, it's hard enough to kill him, but it's very hard to spoil him, sir.
Not at all. Speak well of the law. Take care of your chest and voice and leave the law to take care of itself, my good friend. And I give you that advice.
He said, damn, sir, what settles on me chest and voice? I leave you to judge what a damp way of earning a living mine is.
Yes. Well, we all have our various ways of gaining a livelihood. Some of us have damp ways and some have dry. Here is the letter. Go along.
What's on it?
Nothing yet.
What's coming on?
Freezing case.
The courtroom one, eh?
Yeah. Draw him on a hurdle to be half-hanged, and then taken down and sliced before his own face.
I know, Fred.
And then his insides will be taken out and burnt while he looks on, and his head will be chopped off, and he'll be cut into quarters.
Waste?
It's the law. That's the sentence.
If he's found guilty, you mean?
Oh, they'll find him guilty.
They will. Don't you be afraid of that.
Where do the officials sit, the lawyers and such?
Down there to the right. See? You've got an interest in them, have you?
Yeah, a message for one I'm being took by the doorkeeper. Yeah, he got it. Mr. Lorry, sir!
Now, friend, he's senior. The little man in the brown breeches?
Yeah.
What's he got to do with the case?
Blessed if I know.
What do you have to do with it, then, if a person may inquire?
Blessed if I know that either. Yeah,
who's coming up? He's coming. His lordship.
Mr. Lorry sits down with the gentleman in wigs, not far from a man with a great bundle of papers in front of him. And there's another one, with not a care in the world, and leaning back with his hands in his pockets, looking at the ceiling. What does he see up there, I wonder? He looks like a drinking man to me, does that one. It takes one to know one, I always says. Well, he's full young for it to know her. He's not even bothered by the judge, for the matter of that. Eager faces strain round pillars and corners to get a sight of the judge. Standing on benches, leaning on the shoulders of them in the front row, shoving, pushing just for a sight of him. But not that man in the wig with his hands in his pockets and his face to the ceiling.
You want a wet?
Oh, I don't mind that. Who is that cove with his hands in his trousers and his eyes on the ceiling?
Oh, that's Mr. Stryver's devil, you could say. You'd as likely see him in a pothouse as a courtroom. Oh, look now, here comes a prisoner.
See them all stare at him and get a sight of him. What is he but a young fellow, 25 maybe? Well growed and sunburned. A gentleman from the look. Plainly dressed in dark grey, long black hair in a ribbon. He stands there, not looking about him, and a fine upstanding frame on him. To quarter him, to burn him, to cut his living lights out of him. Waste, I say, Jerry Cruncher. Waste. I'm an interested party, I suppose.
There he is, then, poor bastard.
Silence in the court!
What's the charge?
I told ya, treason. He's a froggy in league with King Louis, he said. He told that Louis what troops we had to send to Canada and North America to go against the French soldiery. That sort of treason.
Bless me. And him, poor gentleman. Over his head, a mirror to throw the light down upon him. There's horrid thought. To think what would happen if all those had been reflected in it. Come back, as the ocean one day is said to be going to give up his dead. All that waste. All them fine bodies. Jerry Cruncher, you're aggravating yourself.
Prisoner at the bar, give your name. My name? My name is Charles Darnay.
Wait here, miss. They'll call you when you want it.
But, sir, my father is not well. He's confused. They said to come to the court. That's all they said.
Well, can you tell us what's being heard?
Treason.
What do we know of treason?
Well, how would I know that, sir? It'll be quiet enough out here. Now, miss, you do what I say. They'll call you. What side are you on?
Against.
Against what side?
The prisoners. We don't know who or what. They told us nothing. We had a summons to be here at a time and on a day and...
Bless you. No need to worry yourself. If it's against that prisoner, it's cut and dried already. Nothing you can say will change a thing. Be easy, miss. Speak up and go home like a law-abiding citizen. Wait here.
He is young in years, but old in treasonable practices.
The prisoner has gone back and forth from England to France. There has been secret correspondence, of which the prisoner can give no honest account. Without a good patriot, we would never have brought his treason to the light of this court before your lordship.
Yes, yes, go on.
This patriot, at one time the prisoner's friend, discovered in an auspicious and an evil hour his infamy, and felt he could no longer cherish this friend to his bosom.
I'd sooner have enemies as friends like that one. You go and have a wet friend.
Virtue, as has been observed by the poets, in many passages which I'm sure the jury will know well and have on the tips of their tongues.
Maybe, Mr. Attorney General, maybe they do. Get on, if you please.
And as your lordship pleases.
Slicing him, butchering him.
He used to. Not so much of a gentleman tomorrow.
This unimpeachable witness will be presented to the gentlemen of the jury forthwith, will prove, without dispute, the infamy of the person in the dock. That the prisoner had been furnished with lists of His Majesty's forces, of their disposition and preparation, both by land and sea, and gave this information to a hostile power. Admitted, these lists are not in the handwriting of the prisoner, but this merely shows his artful nature.
I will have silence in my court. Or clear it.
Gentlemen of the jury, you are loyal men, I know. You are reasonable men, as you know yourselves to be. And you will find the prisoner at the bar guilty, and make an end of him, like that or not. Take off his head, or you will not sleep easy in your beds. Your wives will not sleep easy. Your children will not sleep easy.
Blue flies at the carcass already, and Mr. Lorry are going for the door. And the gentleman who was a steward at the ceiling with him. Well, well. Who's this then?
John Barset! John Barset!
Who's Barset?
A witness. Barset. We know him in this court. It's a certain end they're making to bring him in.
Mr. Carton, they have him dead already, sir.
Do they? I wasn't listening. It's usually nonsense if it's the Attorney General, I find.
They have him boxed up and buried, from the sound of it. Is it true?
Well, as to that, ask my principal. Mr. Stryver defends him. We'll see, Mr. Lorry. Now, if you'll excuse me, you could join me, sir, in a drink?
No, thank you, sir. I'll go back in. I just needed the air.
Mr. Lorry? Mr. Lorry, what are you doing here?
Business. Nothing. But you, is your father with you?
He is here. Yes, come to him, please. We were both summoned. We have no notion what for.
I see. Dr. Manet. Good morning.
Oh, Jarvis, were you summoned?
Yes.
I know nothing of the courts, and my father is not well. He is not well.
Look, the law says we should be here, Lucy, so... I mean, we're in no position to say no, are we? Foreigners in a foreign land...
What is it all about, Mr. Lorry?
Oh, come with me, both of you. Come into the court and sit with me. It would be best, I think. There is room.
I took them into the court. The prisoner saw them both immediately. And so much did his aspect change that all eyes were turned upon us. In particular, upon the doctor and his daughter. For after all, there is nothing remarkable about myself. The spectator saw in the two figures a young lady of little more than 20 and a gentleman who was evidently her father. A man of very remarkable appearance in respect of the absolute whiteness of his hair and a certain indescribable intensity of face. Lucy drew close to him in her pity for the prisoner and her dread of the scene. Poor Darnay. For the Attorney General was using his questions to spin the rope, grind the axe, and hammer the nails into the scaffold.
You have never been a spy, Mr. Barsad?
Never.
Were you concerned to tell authority of your friend's iniquity?
I love my country, sir. I'd as soon not be here to tell it again. But he passed secrets.
And why are you here?
For justice, for my country, and to tell the truth because you asked me to be here.
And for 20 guineas or more.
My oath, is that the truth?
Well known. They all know it. You'll see.
No more questions, my lord.
Hey, the young drinker's on his feet at last.
My lord, the defence has a few matters it would like cleared up.
Well, Mr. Carton, hurry it up, sir.
I will try, my lord. Never a spy, Mr. Barsad.
Never. I told...
What do you live on?
My property.
Which is?
No business of anybody's.
Inherited, was it?
Yes.
Distant relation, was it?
Rather.
Ever been in prison?
Certainly not.
Never in a debtor's prison?
I don't see what that has to do with it.
Oh, well. Oh, now.
What?
Wait.
Never in a debtor's prison. Come, sir. Never?
Yes.
How many times?
2. 3 times, maybe.
Not 5 or 6?
Perhaps.
What profession?
Gentleman.
Ever been kicked?
Might have been.
Frequently?
No.
Kicked downstairs. Kicked for what reason?
I fell down the stairs.
Kicked down the stairs for cheating at dice?
Lies. The man who kicked me down lied. He was drunk.
Swear it was not true?
Positively.
Ever borrow money off the prisoner?
Yes.
Ever pay him?
No.
Is it not the truth that your intimacy with the prisoner is only slight? Forced upon the prisoner in coaches and inns and packets?
No.
The lists. How did he come by them?
No notion, sir.
You'd procured them yourself, hadn't you, Mr. Barsad?
Oh,
my lord! I've nearly done with him. Expect to get anything by this evidence, do you, Barsad?
No, I do not.
Not, in fact, in regular government pay and employment to lay traps?
Oh, dear, no. Never.
Lies.
All motives of sheer patriotism.
Absolutely. Yes.
Roger Clyde!
It's a very Roger devious code, that good young man, Jerry Cruncher. And he sits quiet and stares at the ceiling again, as if his life depended on it. Not even a glance at the prisoner. He's a rum un.
I took service with the prisoner 4 years ago, sir. On the Calais packet, I asked him if he had need of a man, and he engaged me.
Go on.
I had suspicions and kept an eye soon after. You see things, my lord. Arranging clothes like you do if you're in my station. See lists and such in pockets and on desks. Oh. Then he shows these same lists to French gentlemen, Calais and Boulogne. I love my country, my lord, and I knew him for what he was and turned him in.
He's a liar, that one on my oath.
Ever took a silver teapot, Mr. Clyde?
It was a mustard pot and only plate here.
Know the last witness, Mr. Barsad?
Maybe.
8 years or so.
I might have.
Yes or no, Mr. Clyde? The jury want to know.
Yes.
Q.
curious coincidence.
I don't call it that. Most coincidences are curious. So, my only motive is pure patriotism.
Yes, I'm sure, just like the previous witness.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Jarvis Lorry.
You are a clerk in Tellson's Bank?
I am.
On a certain Friday night in November 1775, did business occasion you to travel between London and Dover by mail?
It did.
Were there any other passengers in the mail?
Two.
Mr. Lorry, look upon the prisoner. Was he one of those two passengers?
I really cannot undertake to say he was.
Does he resemble either of the two passengers?
Don't you tell him, Mr. Hill.
Both were so wrapped up and the night so dark, we were all so reserved that I cannot undertake to say even that.
Well, supposing him wrapped up as those two passengers were, is there anything in his bulk and stature that rendered it unlikely he was one of them?
No.
You will not swear, Mr. Lorry, that he was not one of them.
Oh.
So at least you may say he may have been one of them.
Except that I remember them both to have been, well, like myself, timorous of highwaymen, and the prisoner has not a timorous air.
You tell him, Mr. Lorry, sir, to let him rock it.
Have you seen the prisoner to your certain knowledge before?
I have.
Where?
I was returning from France a few days afterwards, and at Calais the prisoner came aboard the packet and made the voyage with me.
At what hour did he come aboard?
At a little after midnight.
Dead of night. Had you any companions?
Two. A gentleman and a lady. They are here.
They are here. Had you any conversation with the prisoner?
Hardly any. The weather was stormy and the passage long and rough, and I lay on a sofa almost from shore to shore.
Miss Manette!
The woman in the case, friend. Mark my words. The woman in the case.
Pretty little thing.
She'll hang him, though, mark me.
Miss Manette, a look upon the prisoner.
Look at him, poor beggar. And her a-pitying him and him changing colour and his hands scrabbling the herbs on the ledge of the dock. He's more agitated by her look than by the old lot of us, it seems. She's an innocent from the look of her, and he's a-seeing what his ways have brought him to. No hatchery, Crutcher. The colour gone from his shaking lips to his heart. Poor devil.
I would not hurt him, sir, for he was kind to my father. May I know your name, sir?
My name? Charles Darnay. May I help you?
My father needs the air.
Then let me make him comfortable.
It's all right, Father. It's all right. We have help. A friend to help us. He is frail, you see, sir. And confused by age.
Now, be easy, Mademoiselle. He will make up his bed and he will soon sleep.
Had he come aboard alone?
No, there were two French gentlemen with him.
I see. Had any papers been handed about among them similar to these?
Indeed, I don't know. They spoke very low, and the light of the lamp hanging at the top of the cabin steps was very dull. I saw only that they looked at papers.
Mm-hmm. Now, to the prisoner's conversation, Miss Manette.
The gentleman was open in his.
Do you mean the prisoner?
Yes, my lord.
Then say the prisoner.
Yes, my lord. He was open in his confidence with me. He was kind and good and useful to my father. I hope I may not repay him by doing him harm today.
Miss Manette, if the prisoner does not perfectly understand that you give the evidence which it is your duty to give, which you must give, and which you cannot escape from giving, with great unwillingness, he is the only person present in that condition. Please go on.
He told me he was travelling on business of a delicate nature. People might get into trouble.
I tell you the truth, Miss Manette, but I have papers in another name. Sometimes I will go back to France, perhaps, and back again to England. For a long time to come.
Is it dangerous, sir?
It has its dangers. But people depend upon me, and I have my duty to do.
I don't understand you, sir. Surely...
Nor should you understand. I wish...
Sir?
Sometimes, mademoiselle, I wish I could be still. Could rest easy. Stay in one place long enough to... Your friend. He sleeps like a child in the cabin.
Mr. Lorry. He is a kind old man indeed. And afraid of the sea, I think. He deserves his repose, Mr. Danny.
Then one may hope that one day it will be my reward also.
I will pray you are safe, sir.
Thank you. Your father sleeps, I think.
At last.
I would hope in other circumstances that I might perhaps have been a friend also.
You are already a friend, sir. Your kindness to my father I will not forget.
Dr. Manette, have you seen the prisoner before?
Once, when he called at my lodgings in London, some 3 years or 3 years and a half ago.
Can you identify him as your fellow passenger?
Sir, I cannot.
Is there any reason, any special reason for this?
My lord, I do object.
Mr. Stryver, you're with us then. I thought you left the case in the hands of your young friend, Mr. Carton. Well, well. No, sir. Sit down, if you please.
As your lord.
Dr. Manette, answer the question.
Well, there is a reason.
Has it been your misfortune to undergo a long imprisonment without trial, without even accusation, in your native country, Dr. Manette?
A long imprisonment.
Have you no remembrance of the occasion?
Oh, none. My mind is a blank from some time when I employed myself in captivity making shoes to the time when I found myself living in London with my dear daughter here. I have... no remembrance, even of how she became familiar to me, though she's my daughter.
Thank you, Dr. Manette.
Cold. You got a wit about your friend. Poor old white-haired boy. You got a drink?
Nothing.
Here. What's the young un doing now? What was looking at the ceiling? I know he sent across to the Bluff Cove.
I see. Thank you, Mr. Carton. Thank you.
Yeah.
Get on, Mr. Stryver, if you please.
I have one question more for the witness, my lord. You have told us you never saw the prisoner but once, and that in the coffee room of an hotel in Dover.
That's the truth, sir.
Maybe. And maybe it is not all the truth. You say again you are sure it was the prisoner.
Certain.
Did you ever see anybody very like the prisoner?
Not so like it could be mistaken.
Really? Look well upon my learned friend, Mr. Cotton, over there. Hmm? And then look well on the prisoner. How say you? Are they very like each other? Stand up, Mr. Cotton, if you please.
They are, damn me, they are. Apart from the look he has of being a drinking man, I'd swear them brothers at least.
If my learned friend would remove his wig...
Bust me, a devil!
Now, are you so sure you saw the prisoner in the hotel coffee house?
Are we now to try Mr. Carton for treason?
Mr. Stryver called his few witnesses and then had to attend while Mr. Attorney General turned the old suit of clothes Mr. Stryver had fitted on the jury inside out, showing how Bass, Ed and Clyde were even 100 times better than he thought them, and the prisoner 100 times worse. Lastly, come my lord himself, turning the suit of clothes, now inside out, now outside in, but on the whole decidedly trimming and shaping them into grave clothes for the prisoner. And a wicked waste, I declare.
Had access to his innermost thoughts and secrets. In the long run, it is for you to make up your own mind.
Oh, my life! You need a dose of flopping off and that judge stitched him up. What now?
I'll retire and consider, my opinion.
And the jury obliged him.
They'll find the prisoner guilty. Not my opinion only, but I say guilty.
Officer, officer, Mr. Carlton, sir. The young lady, look to her. Help the old gentleman to take her out. Don't you see she will faint in the crush?
Yes, sir.
It's all right.
Sorry. Sorry. Come on, madam, this way.
You've done the right
thing. Thank you. Take some air, lovely. You'll be right as rain.
Right away there, poor old man. Put him in the witness box.
Thank you very much, lawyer.
That lawyer should be demanding a dog now. What's he doing?
Looking for his fee before he gets turned off.
Mr. Darnay.
I thank you for your efforts, Mr. Carton.
Yes, well, maybe you do, maybe you do. You will be anxious about the young lady. She will do very well. You have seen the worst of her agitation.
I am deeply sorry to have been the cause of it. Could you tell her so for me with my fervent acknowledgements?
Yes, I could. I will if you ask it.
I do ask it. Accept my thanks.
What do you expect? The worst. It is the wisest thing to expect. Their withdrawing is in your favor. We shall see. We shall see.
It's done it! What? I just went out for a wait and they've been coming. What's the word? It's acquitting!
James! James Cruncher!
Here, sir! Come here!
Here I am, sir.
Take this paper.
Yes, sir. You could say we come to life, I suppose, Mr. Lorry.
We call to... Yes, Jerry, you could. Now, Jerry, hurry.
I left them in them dimly lighted passages, waiting for the prisoner to go up to them. I left with a stinking human stew as had been a-boiling in the court all day. Strained off to the pothouses and courts about the bailey. Disappointed not to have a quarter in to enjoy the next day. I seen Dr. Manette, Lucy Manette, a pretty thing. Mr. Lorry.
Do hurry up, Jerry.
I'll hurry, Mr. Lorry, sir. On my way, sir. That lawyer Stryver waited for. Shoulder him. And the rest gathered round Darnie, just released, congratulating him on his escape from death. Recalled to life, indeed.
Miss Manette, may I please thank you for your concern?
I'm so sorry to have been here.
I must tell you, it gave me hope to see you in the court. I could hardly believe all the world was a bad place when I saw you there. So, my thanks for your coming.
Mr. Darnay, I'm pleased for your good fortune.
And a good counsel, sir.
I wish to thank him and his fellow.
Carton, they are inseparable, it seems, in court. He has a reputation and no reputation, sir, if you follow me.
I would still wish to thank him.
Well, that went off well enough.
I owe you everything, Mr. Stryver. I cannot thank you enough.
That is certain, Mr. Darnay. I am glad to have brought you off with honour.
I am also glad, sir.
We are all delighted. You did well, Mr. Stryver.
I think I may say as much. Is the young lady quite recovered?
I think she is, sir. Miss Manette, may I introduce you to...
Stryver, miss. Mr. Stryver, at your service.
It's to be hoped not, sir.
I beg you. Oh. Indeed, of course. Though it would be a pleasure, I assure you, Miss Manette.
I'm glad you were successful, sir, for Mr. Darnay's sake. It was a hateful business.
Indeed, Mrs. Stryver, you have laid me under an obligation to you for life. In two senses.
I have done my best for you, Mr. Darnay, and my best is as good as another man's, I believe.
Oh, much better.
You think so? Well, you have been present all day, and you ought to know, Lorry. You're a man of business, too.
And as such I say, I will appeal to Dr. Manette to break up this conference and order us all to our homes. Miss Lucy looks ill. Mr. Darnay has had a terrible day. We are worn out.
Speak for yourself, Mr. Lorry. I have a night's work to do yet. But speak for yourself.
I speak for myself, and for Mr. Darnay, and for Miss Lucy, and... Miss Lucy, do you not think I may speak for us all? Your father... The old man's face had become frozen, as it were, in a very curious look at Darnay. An intent look,
deepening into a frown of dislike and distrust, not even unmixed with fear.
Father. Father.
Yes?
Shall we go home, my father?
Yes.
The lights were nearly all put out in the passages. The iron gates were being closed with a jar and a rattle, and the dismal place was deserted. Until tomorrow's interest of gallows, pillory, whipping post and branding iron should repeople it. Mr. Lorry and Mr. Darnay stood and talked on the pavement.
I've known them for a very long time, Mr. Darnay. Their confidence is something I do enjoy.
I would like you to tell Miss Manette that she is to put the whole matter from her mind.
I thought you were invited.
Yes, but before that I have to go away for a time.
Then take care, Mr. Darnay.
Oh, so, Mr. Lorry,
men of business may speak to Mr. Darnay now. I'm sorry, sir. If you knew the conflict that goes on in the business mind when the business mind is divided between good-natured impulse and business appearances, you would be amused, Mr. Darnay. We men of business who serve a house are not our own masters. We have to think of our house more than ourselves.
I know. Don't be nettled, Mr. Lorry. You are as good as another, I have no doubt. Better, I dare say.
And indeed, sir, I really don't know what you have to do with the matter. If you'll excuse me, as you're very much elder for saying so, I really don't know that it is your business.
Business? Bless you, I have no business.
It's a pity you have not, sir.
I think so, too.
If you had, perhaps you would attend to it.
Mr. Lorry, it was by Mr. Carton's intervention that I came free, I think.
Now, that's not the issue, Darnay. Had I a business, Mr. Lorry, Lord love you, I should not attend to it. No, I shouldn't. Well, sir, business is a very good thing, and a very respectable thing. And, sir, if business imposes its restraints and silences and impediments, Mr. Darnay, as a young gentleman, knows how to make allowance for that circumstance. Mr. Darnay, good night. God bless you, sir. I hope you have been this day preserved for a prosperous and happy life. Chair there.
Aye, aye, sir.
Prosperous and happy life. Yes. Prosperous and happy.
Sir?
Strange chance that throws you and me together.
Sir?
This must be a strange night to you, standing alone here with your counterpart on these stone streets.
I hardly seem yet to belong to this world again, Mr. Carton.
I don't wonder. It's not so long since you were pretty far advanced on your way to another. Are you quite well?
I've hardly eaten.
Then why the devil don't you dine? I dined myself while those numbskulls were deliberating which world you should belong to. Let me show you to the nearest tavern to dine well at.
I thank you.
Light, mister. Do you want lighting, mister?
No, boy. Here. Spend that.
Oh, thanks, Gov.
Do you particularly like the man? Why should you particularly like a man who resembles you? There is nothing in you to like, you know that. A man shows you how you have failed, what you have fallen away from, what you might have been. Yet you take him to a tavern for a good plain meal and a bottle of wine. Change places with him. And would you have been looked at by those blue eyes as he was, and commiserated by that agitated face as he was? Do you feel yet that you belong to this terrestrial sphere again, Mr. Darnay?
I am confused. Time and place are... I am confused, Mr. Carton. But I am far enough mended to feel I do belong.
Must be an immense satisfaction. Port?
Thank you, but no.
You will see that I drink, Mr. Darnay.
I had seen, sir, yes.
Yes, well, you had seen. I have one desire, you see. It is to forget that I belong anywhere. The world has no good in it for me, except wine like this, nor I for the world.
But, Mr.
I will finish. We are not much alike in that particular. Indeed, I begin to think we are not much alike in any particular, you and I. Should I like him? He sits confused over his dinner and sips the wine and says nothing. Why don't you call a health, Mr. Darnay? Why don't you
give your toast.
What health? What toast?
It's on the tip of your tongue. It ought to be. Must be. I'll swear it's there.
Miss Manette, then.
Miss Manette, then. Well, then, Mr. Darnay, there's a fair young lady to be pitied by and wept for. How does it feel?
Mr. Carton, you have been very kind.
I? Tell me, is it worth being tried for one's life to be the object of such sympathy and compassion, Mr. Darnay?
There. I have to thank you for your efforts for me today. You turned the case, I think. It was your note to Mr. Stryver, I believe, that turned the case upon its head.
I neither want thanks nor merit any. It was nothing to do in the first place, and I don't know why I did it in the second. Mr. Darnay, let me ask you a question.
Willingly. A small return for your good offices to me.
Do you think I particularly like you?
Really, I have not asked myself the question.
Ask it.
You have acted as if you do, but I don't think you do.
I don't think I do. I begin to have a very good opinion of your understanding.
Nevertheless, I hope there is nothing in that to prevent my calling the reckoning and our parting without ill blood on either side.
Ill blood? Nothing in life. You call the whole reckoning?
Of course.
Sir?
The reckoning, if you please.
And another pint of wine, Tor. And come and wake me up at 10.
Yes, sir.
A last word, Mr. Darnay. You think I'm drunk?
I think you have been drinking.
Think? You know I've been drinking.
Well, since I must say so, I know it, yes.
Then you shall likewise know why before you leave me. I am a disappointed drudge. I care for no man on earth, and no man on earth cares for me.
Perhaps you might have used your talents better.
Maybe so, maybe not. See the mirror there, behind you. Don't let your sober face elate you. You don't know what it might come to. Good night.
I'd still thank you, Mr. Carton, for what you did for me. I wish I'd left a happier man. Good night, sir.
Used my talents better. Are we alike? Maybe we might have been. I have faith in no man on earth. What do I see here in this glass? A face worn by drink, by slaving over other people's misfortunes, by flinging away what might have been, and drinking. Drinking. I have fallen away. I see it in his eyes. Afraid to say it, yet he shows me how and where, and I know why, Darnay. I know why. Blue eyes and fair hair. And a bottle, Mr. Darnay.
He drank it all in a few minutes and fell asleep on his arms with his hair straggling over the table and a long winding sheet and the candle dripping down upon him.
Changed places with him to be looked at by those blue eyes. Come on. Have it out in plain words. You hate the fellow.
Ah, you'd never think it, would you? To see Mr. Carton a-lying there with candle grease in his hair and... education gone down the bottle. There's some say he's jackal for a coming man at the Bailey. Known to judges and the like. Strivering him like peas in the pod. Known for it is Mr. Carton. And for the drinking and the wenching, no doubt.
Here, it's 10 o'clock, sir. It's 10 o'clock. Damn you, sir, wake up!
What's the matter?
It's 10 o'clock, sir.
At night?
Yeah. Your Honour told me to call you.
Oh, yes, I remember. Very well. Very well, damn you.
Stryver's here in his slippers and a loose bedgown, with his throat bare for greater ease. And round his eyes, the wild look of a drinking man. You see the same in pictures of Judge Jeffreys and his sort. His sort. My sort.
Carton.
I am here.
You are late, Memory. You are late.
Late, am I? About the usual time, and maybe a quarter of an hour later. To go through his papers for tomorrow in the Bailey, where he's set amongst that sea of Whigs and set to rise over them, and what's he worth? Well,
not much boiling down to be done tonight. Two sets.
Give me the worst first. And a drink.
You've had your bottle, I perceive. Sydney.
Two, I think. I've been dining with today's acquittal. Or rather, watching him dine's all one.
Yeah, you did well there, I admit it. A rare point, Sydney, that you brought to bear on that identification. When did it strike you?
Well, I thought he was a handsome fellow, and I thought I should have been much the same sort of fellow if I had had any luck.
You and your luck. I'll get to work. Towels for your head and punch ready. I'll read a little till you're ready with the first.
Boil them down for him. Oh, he's a fine one for the talk and the glib and easy point. But can he see the essence of a case? Never. All front and bluster, teeth and trousers. No heart. There's an irony. Sydney Carton to provide the heart, indeed. Well, to it, to it. Are you awake? Stryver.
I'm waiting, friend. Waiting. You're done.
Extracted the meat. The very marrow. Here.
Sir. Sir. Done for the night?
Yes.
Well, a bumper, then.
For you?
Yes, I'll join you, yes. You were very sound, Sydney. In the matter of those Crown witnesses, every question told, your reputation grows.
Reputation?
Soon I shall not be able to afford to keep you on.
No one else would. I am always sound, though, am I not?
I don't gainsay it. What's roughened your temper? Here, put some punch in it. Smooth it again. Ah. You know, you never change, Sydney. Even at school, always the same. 1 minute up, next minute down. Now in spirits, now in despondency.
School? As I was always the same. Always doing others' work for them. Exercises for the boys, seldom my own. You learnt well enough at my hand.
Well, maybe, maybe I did. Maybe your way is the lame way. No energy, no purpose. But look at me. See what Shrewsbury School may make.
Botheration to that. You'll have me listening to morals next. Be damned to that.
Now, you tell me. How have I done what I have done? Now tell me. How do I do what I do? Go on. Tell me.
Partly on my back. Through paying me to help you. I accept you. Ah, what you are, do what you do. We'll be at the front rank, and I will be behind.
Ah, but was I born there?
I was not present at the ceremony, but my opinion is that you were. Before, during, and after Shrewsbury, you have fallen into your rank, and I'm mine. You remember in Paris, Students together, picking up French lore and language and crumbs of little youth. You were always somewhere, and I was always nowhere. You remember Paris?
Whose fault was it?
On my soul, I'm not so sure it was not yours.
Mine?
forever driving and riving and shouldering. And I have no chance for my life but in rust and repose. Oh. It's a gloomy thing to talk about one's past with the day breaking. I was thinking.
Yes, I know. And I know who about.
No.
Since she was in their courtroom, you have thought about little else.
Who?
Don't pretend, Sydney. A pretty witness. Drink to her, shall we? The good Dr. Manette's picturesque daughter.
She pretty?
Is she not?
No.
And man alive, she was the admiration of the whole court.
Rot the admiration of the whole court. Who made the old Bailey a judge of beauty? Golden-haired doll.
You know, Sydney, you know, I rather thought at that time that you sympathized with the golden-haired doll and were quick to see when the golden-haired doll nearly fainted away in the courtroom.
Quick to see. If a girl, doll or no doll, swoons within a yard of a man's nose, a man can see, surely. I'll pledge you, but deny the beauty. Now. Home. Bed. But deny the beauty. Now. Home. Bed.